we're going to have to rebuild within this wild, wild west of information flow some sort of curating function.
It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve.
We've got to maybe do something with the internet.
Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Somebody will say, oh, freedom of speech, freedom of speech. These are foolish people.
LinkedIn sued for iOS clipboard spying. Backdoors found in 29 FTTH devices manufactured in China. Driver charged with negligence after a Tesla on autopilot crashes into a police cruiser. And police use Twitter's data miner to surveil Black Lives Matter protesters. Hello, everybody. Mark Jeftovic here with another edition of the Access of Easy Weekly Digest. This is episode 154. We're taping this on July 13th, 2020. The show notes for this week's edition would be at accessofeasy.com/154. And the quote for last week was, "The most basic question is not what is best, but who shall decide what is best." That was Thomas Sowell. Nobody got it. Somebody guessed Stalin. No. This week's quote is, "When you blame others, you give up your power to change." Remember the rules. You don't search this up online. And the first person to post the correct source of the quote to the show notes page gets their next domain renewal or web hosting renewal on us. Okay, so an ex-security advisor has said that China's hacking of Nortel was the beginning of the end for that company. So there's a Bloomberg piece that continues exploring the connection between Chinese hackers and the penetration of Nortel, the once mighty Canadian tech giant, and its demise. We referenced this back in Access of Easy number 134, when a long National Post piece was looking at Huawei's possible involvement in the intellectual property theft that helped them acquire dominance in the global market. So the difference in the Bloomberg piece is it more directly ascribes the hacks and the thefts to state-sponsored actors working at the behest of the Chinese Communist Party to the benefit of Huawei. At one point, hackers used then-CEO Frank Dunn's login credentials to breach the company's uppermost trove of documents, and they sent over 800 of them back to China. Quote, Brian Shields, who was then a senior advisor on systems security and part of the five-person team that investigated the breach, years later would look at the hack and Nortel's failure to adequately respond to it as the beginning of the end of the company. End quote. I mean, in my opinion, the demise of most, if not all, companies is usually self-inflicted. If it's true that they were hacked by China, I don't think that sunk them as much as the institutionalized complacency that allowed that to happen did. Remember, CSIS had reportedly been warning Nortel about this problem that they had been penetrated by Chinese hackers in the late 90s already, but the company didn't act on it. And I've mentioned this book before, Paul Manthorpe's Claws of the Panda, which details the CCP's espionage and propaganda efforts in Canada over the last several decades. We link to that in the show notes page. Canadians can opt out of facial recognition database by opting into database. In effect, Canadians are able to opt out of ClearView's facial recognition database. The only catch is in order to do it, you have to send them a picture of your face, ostensibly to figure out what to remove, which of course is nonsense in my mind because the database matches to your identity. So you can key on that identity and remove all associated pictures. If the associations are wrong, that's not your problem, that's ClearView's problem. Anyway, ClearView has suspended operations in Canada in response to a privacy commissioner investigation, but that doesn't mean they still don't have lots of Canadians in their database. Jesse Hirsch, via the MetaViews channel, also looks at this and whether the facial recognition genie has already been let out of the bottle. This is a similar policy that the controversial database Locate Family was using. They were scraping, or they are scraping web and compiling multiple data sources to assemble a big database of personal contact data, and they required you to send in photo ID to have yourself removed from the database. If you're paying attention, you may already know Locate Family was indeed an EasyDNS client for a while. When they came on the system, we had a couple of phone calls with them. One of our stipulations was that they had to lose that policy and honor all removal requests without requiring the person to submit ID of any kind. And recently, when it came to light that they were still enforcing the original policy, we sent them packing and showed them the door. LinkedIn sued for iOS clipboard spying. Lately, there's been a growing awareness around iOS clipboard spying. That's when apps snoop on the data you have on your clipboard, copied from any app on your iOS device for who knows what reasons. And it's all coming to light now because the next iteration of iOS, version 14, comes with a new transparency feature that warns you when an app is accessing your clipboard, similar to how you get warned when one tries to access your camera roll or your microphone. So it turns out there are a lot of apps doing that. 2 weeks ago, we reported on how TikTok had already been caught doing this a year ago and said they would stop, and then they got caught doing it again and they said they would stop again. Last week, we reported on how there were a lot more apps doing it. I forget the number, I don't have it in front of me, but it was north of 30. LinkedIn does the same thing, according to a newly filed class action suit. In fact, LinkedIn even goes further that by also spying on nearby iOS device clipboards. And according to the suit filed in a San Francisco federal court, the app does so all the time and constantly. Apparently, LinkedIn's clipboard spying was reported earlier in the month by The Verge and Forbes, but I seem to have missed it, so sorry about that. Now we know, if you didn't already. Police used Twitter's data miner to surveil Black Lives Matter protesters. So this article in The Intercept looked at the Twitter-linked startup called Dataminer and their role in conducting surveillance of Black Lives Matter demonstrators during the George Floyd protests. According to Dataminer CEO Ted Bailey, they are a, quote, global sensor network for emerging events and consumer signals, end quote. But it looks like they do more than sift through Twitter for consumer signals, because it was also used for, quote, tipping off police to social media posts with the latest whereabouts and actions of demonstrators, end quote. So The Intercept also notes, quote, the monitoring seems at odds with claims from both Twitter and Dataminer that neither company would engage in or facilitate domestic surveillance following a string of 2016 controversies, end quote. Twitter is one of Dataminer's lead investors, as is the CIA investment fund InQtel. And Twitter gives Dataminer an advantageous access to raw, unfiltered, unmetered data from Twitter called the fire hose, which not very many companies can access. These guys can, and it gives them the ability to, quote, scan every public tweet as soon as the author hits send, end quote. Backdoors found in 29 FTTH devices manufactured in China. So think of FTTH OLT devices as the boxes that terminate optical cable connections from your broadband provider, like a cable or a DSL modem, only for fiber. The acronym FTTH is fiber to the home, OLT is optical line termination. And security researchers have discovered what appears to be intentional backdoors in 29 types of these devices manufactured by China-based CData. The backdoors, quote, grant access to a secret Telnet admin account running on the device's WAN interface, close quote. The WAN interface means that's the publicly accessible port on the internet-facing side, so it can be reached from anywhere in the world. In all, 7 security vulnerabilities were detailed. The devices are sold under the CData brand, as well as OEM'd as OptiLink and BLY. They're deployed worldwide across key points in various ISP networks and terminate connections in millions of homes. So we link to the reports in the show notes and the article on ZDNet. More malware found pre-installed in phones supplied in U.S. government programs. So back in Access of Easy 120, we covered how low-cost phones used in a U.S. government subsidy program for low-income households came pre-installed with malware. That was in January when researchers uncovered unremovable Chinese malware on the Unimax 3CL, which is the cheapest smartphone offered under the U.S. Lifeline Assistance Subsidy Program, which is administered by Virgin. So now, via dark reading, we learned that more compromised apps have been discovered on another phone in the same program. This time, it's the American Network Solutions ANS UL40 running Android 7.1.1. Once again, the phone ships with a compromised settings app infected with the Android Trojan downloader Woltby.sek, which can download apps from third-party stores. Researchers, they went ahead and tested apps downloaded from those third-party stores. So far, they haven't found any further infections in them, but they caution it's easy to introduce further infections through those stores at a later date. U.S. judge skeptical that First Amendment means that ISPs can sell your data. So an interesting legal battle taking place down in the U.S. in which the state of Maine passed an internet privacy bill that has similar characteristics to the ones that the FCC struck down in early 2017. So for residents of the state, the law reinstates many consumer protections around requiring consent before sharing data or marketing that were overturned at the federal level. So now telecom lobby groups are suing the state, alleging that the laws A, violate their First Amendment rights to free speech, and B, are already superseded by that federal FCC action in 2017. So the telecoms look like they've lost this round as a judge declined to apply, quote, strict scrutiny, end quote, of the First Amendment aspects, instead applying an intermediate First Amendment scrutiny that applies to commercial speech. The judge also rejected the claim that the law was superseded by the federal action. Driver charged with negligence after a Tesla on autopilot crashes into a police cruiser. So a Massachusetts man has been charged with negligent driving after his Tesla slammed into a stationary police vehicle. It was on the side of the road conducting a traffic stop. He told police he must not have been paying attention. And this is by no means the first accident involving a Tesla on autopilot, including multiple fatalities. So far, it's been mainly the drivers that get themselves killed. But at least one case so far alleges that a Tesla on autopilot killed a pedestrian. And autopilot is also alleged, but not yet verified, in a head-on collision in Germany, where a Model 3 veered into oncoming traffic, killing three women in the other vehicle. There's a website that tracks all the Tesla fatalities at tesladeaths.com. It says whether autopilot was engaged or not, whether it was suspected to be engaged, whether it was verified to be engaged, and all sorts of related fatalities. And, you know, Tesla continues to put out these buggy cars on the road, and they continue to promise full self-driving vehicles by the end of the year, over and over again, not to mention the robo-taxi fairy tale. So the robo-taxi fairy tale is the one where you'll be able to buy a Tesla and have it out on the road making $30,000 a year as an Uber-like self-driving car while you sit at the kitchen table earning money doing nothing. For those playing at home, Elon says a lot of things. The show notes, we link to an ElonMusk.today site, which shows you the timeline of when Elon promises something and the time elapsed before it is delivered, if ever. I know you might think I'm being a little harsh on the guy, but I think I'm not against electric vehicles, but I think Elon Musk and Tesla is the next Enron, and time will tell. We'll see what happens. But EasyDNS is a friendly haven for members of the so-called Tesla Q collective. We've got the odd Tesla Q website here, and if you've got a legitimate Tesla Q project, You're looking for a safe place to keep your content where it's not going to get hit with a lot of takedowns and harassment, then just hit me up in an email, markjr@easydns.com, and we will get you set up. Mozilla suspends file sending service on malware concerns. So this is my favorite large file sending service. It was Mozilla's Firefox Send, and it's been temporarily suspended on concerns that the system was being abused to distribute malware. Complaints were increasing, and so they've paused it while they figure out what to do about it and to add a report abuse function. I mention it here because I thought I had recommended it before in Access of Easy, but I can't find the reference. I like it because you don't have to install any clients on your computers or your devices. You just use the web browser. You can set passwords. You can set download limits and time limits and notifications. It's pretty cool, and I hope it comes back soon. Canadian Tire stores shut down after every item scans as Mr. Potato Head. And it's not the onion. At least two Canadian Tire locations in southwestern Ontario had to shut down on June 29th after something went wrong with the checkout systems and every item presented scanned as Mr. Potato Head. I had to reread that a couple of times to make sure I wasn't reading something that was copy and pasted from the Beaverton, but it wasn't. The stores that were known to be affected were in Lindsay and Whitby, which are a couple of smaller cities east of Toronto, and they shut down temporarily and ascribed the error to a data download error. But this incident, in a benign and amusing way, demonstrates our increasing brittleness of our supply chains as we become ever more reliant on algos to mediate every aspect of our lives. And this week on the Axis of Easy, on Salon number 12, we talked about the rise and fall of the neo-feudal network state. And we finally seem to have hit on a moniker that may very well describe the what comes next after the end of the era of the nation state, which we all think is happening in one way or another. Jesse formulated the concept of the network state, which we think will fuse with Charles's idea of neo-feudalism. And I call the backdrop against how all that plays out the jackpot after the William Gibson Near Future novels. But before you watch or listen to this week's episode, you really should read Charles's accompanying piece about it on his blog. All of that is linked in the show notes page. That's it for this week. Those show notes will be at accessofeasy.com/154. And as always, stay safe, stay sane, stay healthy, and we'll see you all next week. Thanks. Rich or fresh, they just got hoarded and sore.